I realized I switched, probably using, having in hand, accidentally pushed the button and the video stopped before the timer. I put timer again now, 33 minutes. Anyway, so the hospital, Gestapo, the physical training rehabilitation center, did some job and on my foot and left foot because of a knee to make it leg to make the leg work again. And myself, I did several hours a day, like 10, 15, 20 minutes at a time on the hour seven, I think 7, 8 floors. It was a hospital in my little town. And it was pretty painful. It was very, very painful. I mean, it's so bad that it just tears came from eyes by itself. You just, if somebody had had such a pain in life, you know, it's you can do nothing about it. It's just a bodily reaction, you know. It's just painful. And I didn't shout, I didn't cry, but you know, to move up 7 floors and come down 7 floors 10 times at a time, many times a day, with a leg where a knee was put together from 5 pieces to make it move again. It was painful, but I made it move. I made it move, and when I got home, I guess I was only 1 week thereafter. No, even less. I was, again, a couple of days only, because there was nothing to hold me in hospital. Everything was all right already. Just have to recuperate myself physically to make a body move. And I don't know if I put away the crutches immediately or a week later. I don't remember these details, you know. My life started to continue. I went even to training again, first just to watch martial arts trainings, not to lose anything interesting. And after half a year or 1 year, even that I don't remember, probably it was 1 year, let's say 1 year, not to get too wrong, but definitely not more, definitely more. I went to competition already, so my leg was completely moving so well. I was completely able to put the knee, I don't know in English how to say it, to sit down, let's say. I was completely able to sit down even on one leg, but not the first year. I think I didn't do 1 year sit down, sit-ups, because just a cautious reason not to break my knee. But I was able to move, and when I learned to sit on the knees, one on one side a little bit, because my knee wouldn't go completely back. And then I went to hospital, and they asked, what's the problem, that you know, I can't sit down completely on the knees, in Japanese style, you know, martial arts training. And I took my pictures, my Röntgen x-ray pictures with them, and they look at them, and you know, I was just shocked. They looked at, I shouldn't be able to do that by the pictures after the accident, but that's what I did. And so I said, now you know, just to give a lesson to other people, that everything is possible if you really want to. But when I was in competition on judo, I've been doing, when I was young, pretty well in judo. Just to say, imagine how well I was prepared, not just to be bravery or proud myself, but just to tell that how well I was prepared before the car accident. So, and why I didn't die in car accident. So when I was younger, before the army, I had many competitions on judo. I started 9 years of age, and in some national competition I even won second place And on my town, I was always first, and I was biggest guy because I grew very fast. You know, I was just tall, and maybe that helped. But I was always in heaviest weight on judo, and there were other heavy guys as well, but they were just a little bit fatter probably. But anyway, it was never easy on competition. But I was always, almost always, let's say, first place on my town on competitions, and I even got second place on national competition on judo when I was younger. Maybe 15 years or something, and there a guy who got the first place and a national competition. I was as well on maximum heavy, the heaviest weight. I wasn't fat. I was just good muscle, and the first place guy, he later won the world championship on junior in Japan. The first guy ever who took junior first title out of Japan. It was from our country, and I lost him just with a couple of points to the second place. So that gives you just a picture that I was pretty well prepared. In our country, we trained hard. It's not like European style. I've seen European schools later, even Japanese. When I lived in Japan, I see our guys, because of the life we had there, we trained hard. And for example, karate competitionship, karate everybody studied secretly. It was forbidden in Soviet times, but secretly they still did. Even our judo training dojos after the training. So everybody went, so only dedicated people who weren't talking to anyone, they trained karate. And when it became legal after my country separated from Russia and Soviet collapsed, you know, so in the first open competition in karate, full contact, it was, we had different rules, you know, not like international competition rules, and it was really, you know, after the one competition, two guys died on competition. They changed the rules to international ones, and they didn't make completely full contact anymore. I wasn't so much into karate. I was on wushu, judo, and a little bit of aikido, but karate I started later to practice more because life, but not in young I did judo. And what I want to say, I was so well prepared that I didn't die in car accident physically. I mean, I didn't break apart all my body of this impact. When I, after 1 year training, let's say, maybe less, after the accident of a knee, I went to a first judo competition, and I didn't get any places there, but I was just happy enough that I was able to compete without having pains. I mean, a little bit, but not so much. And I was in judo, it's tough, you know, if you have injury, you have to keep on giving on, but my knee survived. And that's it. My normal life continued. But to say like about my earnings, and you know, even the martial arts school which I had, I didn't make any big money with that. I opened a school in a bigger town. After I moved, I got married, and then basically, you can't take too much money from training, and we trained every day, even 2 days. I had keys of a dojo, and I gave. I didn't want to train in the morning, but the younger guys were very fanatical. My students. I mean, some of them before going to school, we went to the dojo in the morning, like 6 o'clock in the morning already, and I teach them like that, you know. If you want something, it's not a baile, you know, it's not like music. Take an example, a music instrument somebody learns to play. If you just do it twice, three times a week, you'll be playing some, you know, some country songs, but you won't be good. It won't help you in life. And if you want to really that it will help your life, you have to train every day, every single day, even New Year Eve and first January, and every single day, no exceptions. The dojo was always available, and we trained for several hours. Sunday sometimes maybe 6-8 hours. When I was younger, I trained even harder. I trained for 6-8 hours a day, and after teaching myself, I went to other training courses. So when I came back home, then sometimes I was so overtrained that you know, I had a fever, but it was good fever. It was not sick fever. It was just everybody's body was so overheated that it didn't cool down so fast. So I went to sleep. It was like a fever, but it was a good feeling, you know. I mean, that was before the army, that I teach the same style of training to my students when I opened my school in the bigger town. So basically, where did I went? Ah, yeah, so I didn't make any money. I didn't make any money, so I didn't want to have many students. I wanted to have only good students who really wanted to train, and they trained even in the morning before going to school. Coming themselves and afternoon coming to my lessons. And we did a winter time. In my country, winters can get minus 30, minus 25 usually, minus 30, 35 in February some years. And like it minus 20, minus 25, we were still walking, running outside few kilometers, barefoot, bare torso, only the no pants. And I didn't use kimonos because I didn't teach judo. I teach my own style, but I learned judo and other styles. But I say nobody was sick, it was like a really good team. And I didn't do it because of money, so it was just my part of my life, you know. And I had maybe let's say 50 students only in several years. Because every year I didn't take new students. I said, like, listen, let's move forward. Let's not stop back. And I couldn't rent, you know, dojo. I didn't have my own dojo. I wouldn't have been able to pay for it because the country was poor. And, you know, I just had enough to pay the rent from collected from my students. And so we had, as I said, nobody was sick even in my country this time. That wasn't legally strict. Now everybody a little breaks his finger, he goes to insurance or legal case against the teacher, etc. In my country it wasn't like that, you know. We were tough, you know. We didn't complain about little thing or broken eye on during the training or you know, something like that, because it's a part of training. It was getting mature, you know. It wasn't competition that style in my school, that you study for baile, you studied for life, you know. And we used even arms. I teach them against the arms to use, and I teach them what you cannot do against arms. I brought real gun, emptied gun to my students and showed them that what you should do, what you should never do. But I will tell about it in another video, how I trained my students. Because there are sort of things you cannot do against gun. Don't watch the films. Films are all bull, you know. It's many things, you know. Real life is different from films. And that's it, you know. I continued my life. After even the accident, I didn't decide to be. I was offered like having invalidity, second degree invalidity because of the knee. And I didn't even go to fill paperwork, and I said no, it's not gonna pull me back, this accident. And the story is now long. I don't know, I still have time to talk for this video, not to have very short. But what about let's say life in Soviet, post-Soviet 90s, you know, like in my cinema, you know, after the croupiers, I fired them. They found some mafia guys that, because they opened court case against me, and the judge basically their lawyer, not lawyers, but the juridical staff who was in the court, they told me personally that we understand that you're right, but you know, just it's a legal issue, and you're not gonna win this case, you know. And I didn't, so I didn't even went to court. So we won the. I didn't have time. I was so busy, you know. It's just little some people talking or something, because they lost my trust. I fired them, the croupiers. They didn't pay me, and because of a contract, and they some. I don't remember legal exact situation, but They actually warned that I would have to pay for firing fees, which I didn't pay them, that I fired them. And they found then mafia guys to talk to me, you know. And one guy, I was in office in a cinema on the second floor, and the guy came, or third floor, because, yeah, anyway. So the guy came up to the office, and it was like a funny coincidence. I was just, I told you in one, just a few moments ago in the last video, I probably told you that with government, I had a project to build a city hall, a concert hall, and I had my managers of this project had applied for land in the center of a town which was not developed yet. And by the law, the government has to do a public public how to say announcement for everyone. Everyone who wants to apply this hand has to present his project. But they didn't. That was one of the court cases against my. Again, as against the government, I would want to turn against them. But anyway, that moment, still, I was making publicity on newspapers that I'm looking for project managers. I had some local people who weren't very good at managing, so I wanted to have some university professors and experienced businessmen. And I had just a meeting in cinema on third floor, and that was like coming from like 10 people, all well-educated, well-dressed businessmen, professors of universities who wanted to become a manager of this project of a city hall, concert hall in the center of a town. And same time, one mafia guy, wannabe mafia guy, came up to my office, and I said, "Guys, give us just 1 second. We talk in the office." I told the guys all wait outside, the professors, and because I didn't want them to get into a mafia talk, you know. I said, "I have some urgent issue to solve here." And the guy just sit in front of me on the table, and I took out the gun and put it on the table so I could grab it anyway, that he wouldn't. But I just make a point that, what do you want to tell me, you know? And he said, "Look, we have some croupiers fired by you, and you know what, you got to pay." And I said, "Who are you? Who's protecting you? You know, and I'll find out, you know." And he told some names, and you know, I know how it works, you know. So probably, okay, I'll find out after we talk, you know. I'll check it, you know. And he started to somehow aggress me, and I just put him down and took away his cell phone, and took his and threw him down the stairs in front of all out of office, you know. People were outside, all the university professors and the businessman, and I took the guys out of my office and threw him down the stairs, and tell that I take the phone just as a compensation and proof that you've been here, you know. And after we talk, and if you come next time like that, you know, I take off your pants, you know. And he left, you know. And the professor weren't very impressed, so any of them didn't become my manager. It was just a coincidence, you know. Things happen like that, and you know, they knew the life. They also from this country, but they just probably preferred. I didn't have bad relations with them. I was even called to give lectures, less university lessons after publishing my first book on philosophy of martial arts. So I didn't have a, but I didn't go because I was just going to Tianshan Mountains again. I've been Tianshan Mountains several times, not just before the army. So every year I went to travel into Russia after, before I closed the border, and even after with a visa already. So any of them didn't become my managers. But the guy who I threw out down the stairs, who went out Suddenly he went to police. He had some friends in police as well, mafia guy. So he went to mafia guys. That sense that the mafia don't go to police in my country like that, you know. It's just you're over, you're done if you go to police, you know. Nobody will protect you anymore. So he went to complain to some policeman that aggressed him. I took away his phone, and police called me, and you know, come to come we talk. And I went just in case, because even now with police, I didn't know what can happen. You know, not everybody was friend of mine. I knew a couple of bosses, high rank bosses, but I didn't know what the lower rank policeman will do to me there. So I took just in case the gun. It was still illegal gun, but you know, I had to protect myself. You didn't know what can happen, and because so to say, mafia guy called friend was there, so anything could have happened. But we just talked, and I explained him the situation, and. I don't go into details, but when I left calmly, I went out and say, okay, let's go to continue if he wants to. And he wanted, he really had some mafia guys, actually, who I knew personally or dealt with. But, you know, as he was friend of them, and I was just one day was it was summertime. I was one day with another guy. It was very good. It's a funny guy, actually. This guy was really like, if police saw him, his eyes are so deep, you know, and if I saw that just for this face, you have to go to prison because, you know, without any court. But he wasn't an Irma. He was more educated than me. He was just built like that, you know. It was high education, and the engineer was as well. And I used him sometimes as a bodyguard, just as a, for his look, you know. And we were sitting outside, and I didn't smoke, but he did, and I never smoked in my life, because my father's death actually is the reason of smoking. So I never been interested in any woman as well who smoke. As soon as some woman came to me and put up a smoke, asked a cigarette, arrivederci, you know, arrivederci in Italiano, but I said like bye, you know, I don't da sedania, you know, not interested in smoking girls at all, and not impressing me. Just because I've seen the suffering my father had before he died. He had 4 infarcts before he went away, you know, and the 4th time he had when I was in army. So, all because of smoke. Smoking and a little bit drinking, maybe too much, but he wasn't alcoholic. So, anyway, the point is that we were sitting outside. We were sitting outside, was having coffee in a bar, outside bar, open bar. And one mafia guy, big guy, I mean, twice as big as me, you know, like as high as large, you know, who I knew personally, you know, from other dealings. He came to me at let's talk, you know, and but he was acting his role, because his friend was affected by me, so to say, you know, coming to my office, you know. And he called me apart and said like, you know, see the car, we're gonna put you on back of a car and you will disappear, you know. Then I said, what's up, you know? So you took the phone, you know, the guy. I explained the situation, that how it was, and you know, I said that who are you protecting, you know, this guy ran to police, you know, and he suddenly silenced his voice and told me, listen, do it for me, just for me, because you know he's my friend, and he you know just because of me. And I said, okay, I'll sell him back the cell phone for half price, you know. Cell phones were expensive that time, you know. It wasn't like everybody could afford. Only mafia, usually mafia or richer guys, they used, but everybody didn't have cell phone. I had several. I gave to my workers who were dealing who were working for debts, but you know, it was expensive, much better phone than mine was, the latest top model. And I told him I sell him back for half price, because that's deal, 50-50. He get back his phone. I haven't called, I haven't made any call from his. And there were little issues before, you know, almost to shooting, but I don't want to tell every story, you know, just it gets too complicated. Just to make easy sense, that I told the not a boss, but local little gang guy. I told him, okay, we meet in the evening. We set up strelka. Strelka is like a meeting in the evening. I bring the phone and he brings the money. So, and you exchange. We had agreement, you know. And okay, we shake hands. And in the evening, I left to a parking of a gas station. And you know, we came with several cars, like tons of people, you know. And I came alone. We look around, and we look. Where are you guys? I said, why do I need my guys to bring here? You know, we had a deal, you know, and we already agreed. There's nothing. You know, you have to know the rules. If you play by the rules, nobody can attach you. And if you're right, of course. If you're wrong, they're gonna do anyway. Whoever you are, you know, even top mafia guys. If they are wrong, they are wrong. You know, and I was right. So. I basically give a phone, and he went with the phone to the guy who came to treat me in my office in cinema, and he checked his phone. I even didn't have unlocked it because he had lock on, but I could have unlocked it by technician, but I didn't have unlocked it, and everything was okay. I didn't have made any calls. So he gave me half price of a phone, he brought me money, and that was it, you know. So it's just little things that was a life. It was a life of survival. If you wanted to do any business, if you wanted to just leave, you couldn't avoid to deal with the local gangs, I mean, mafia gangs, and just the bad guys, I mean, wannabes, you know, who were shooting for nothing, you know. And mafia took care of them better than government did. Two bad guys, I mean, who didn't pay any taxes to mafia neither. So, you know, you'd learn. When you grow up in this situation, you talk to people and they explain you, and you, by practice, you just learn how the life is there. And that's what I wanted to say, that I couldn't make any big business, because big business was all controlled by tougher people than I was. So I was trying to stick to like philosophy. I wrote a book for my students, not to explain in every training the same philosophy. Newcomers sometimes. I didn't take much newcomers, but anyway, if sometimes somebody really wants to come, and somebody invites him or her, and I have to explain all from zero the philosophy first, how to think, how to etc. etc. So I wrote a book about it, and after publishing that book, as I said, I was called to university because somebody got a hand on this book. A philosophy professor in university, and he was impressed, and he called me and said, "Man, do you want to give a lesson to university students?" And I was just going that moment to Tian Shan Mountains, and I said, "Okay, when I come back from Tian Shan Mountains," it was my second or third trip. It was already the third trip, I guess, because I did 1 year. I did even two trips in early. Spring and later in the summer, and the 1 year I did I guess 97 I did my second trip. It was already way after army, and 98 I did no 95 it was my second trip to Trans, and 97 I did probably two trips. Yeah, it was like that, you know. I did so many trips around different places, not only Tian Shan, but Asia as well, you know, Russian Asia, and Siberia I was twice, and you know, north to the Kolsky Polostrov, Kolan half island, how we call it, Murmansk. And you know, I don't remember all the dates exactly, but you know, so 97 I was two times. By 1 month, 2 months, I was in mountains training and meditating alone. And coming, when I said to a professor that I come back, then I will give students talk to them in university, but about the philosophy of martial arts, about this particular philosophy which I wrote a book about. But my problem started getting really tough with government, because I said I wasn't into, I didn't know much about corruption. I wrote articles against that, how it's asking money from me, the government was. And when I was in mountains, the last trip I was, I was away from civilization, of course, but I wasn't very far away, because I went to mountains with nothing, only kirka. Kirka is some like little hammer from looking under the snow, that if there is any crevasses that I wouldn't fall through in the mountains, like you know, sometimes you just have a word but you can't say it anyway, it doesn't matter. So that's the only tool I had, but I had normal shoes. I just with the ropes I put the pants, normal pants, not mountaineer pants. In Soviet, after Soviet time, we didn't have much of this stuff. We had the shops for expensive foraging stuff, but they didn't have money to buy all the camping stuff, so expensive ones. So I went with simple clothes just to train. And I didn't, because of that, I didn't go very high mountain. I was just 1.5 kilometers maximum. I went maybe was 4 kilometers height, you know, in some places, you know, but usually it was 1.5 and 2 kilometers height only places. Whereas in that is a Tuyuksu and Tian Shan in Kazakhstan, close to Almaty, and where Tuyuksu was a little hostel. Chimbulak was a little bit lower. It was Olympic like training center of Soviet times, and you know, so people they know what Chimbulak is, you know, in Tian Shan. And I was after a little bit higher, I was at Tuyuksu, little hotel, private one, somebody built will there, and I went a little bit further to train, but I wasn't very far from civilization. And when I was like meditating or just training, at some moment I felt something. Something is happening in my country back. I don't know, either connection with my wife or just you're back in your mind. The things start to settle, and your brain start to give a signal that mathematically, that calculating up your subconscious, that something should be wrong in my country. But anyway, I kind of felt strong need that I have to come down from high mountains to the closest phone, because I even had cell phone took me, but in Kazakhstan they didn't have cell phone connection there, so I couldn't call from my cell phone. Only in Moscow, you know, and a little bit periphery in Moscow, these times they didn't have cell phone connection everywhere. And I came down from high mountains to Chimbulak hostel in the Olympic training center, and I called to a local payphone. I bought the card, I think it was like I bought the card, and with card phone I called to my country and asked my wife that, what's wrong, what's happening. And she said that police is after you, looking for you, and taxis and problems, you know, and they want to close it down, everything. Because every time I went to travel to mountains or anywhere in Kate, I had my company manager as well, who I paid pretty well money just to make bookkeeping and check money coming in, just have a control. You can't let completely without control. And I paid him just for that, just to make sure that everything works and bring money to my wife. Anyway, time is going on. So thing should be had been right, but something was wrong. And when I collected my stuff and came back from mountains, and right now I had the alarm of a timer that video will cut by itself soon, so I have to stop. But I will continue. I'll think a few minutes, I think, if I have something to say. But I came back from mountains. It took a little bit. Yeah, I have one story. I'll tell this too. But when I came back, I had to escape my country. And because the pressure was so bad, the government wanted to put me in prison for not paying taxes, so on their opinion, which I can explain, but I don't know if it's necessary, you know. So anyway, I'll stop now video, because it will cut anyway, and I will start another one, but I'll take a few minutes to think. No, I tell straight away. Anyway, I stop this video.